passionate instigator, and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the last Thursday of the first Thursday of the month for 2019. And as always, on a first Thursday of the month here in the Dr. Kevin Show, we have none other than Matt Connerton and I, as we are kind of tapping gently, ever so gently, on Matt's show, Matt Connerton Unleashed, from 4 to 6, Monday through Friday at WMNH 95.3, or you can go to IPMNation.com and listen to his drive time show. But Matt comes here once a month to fill us in on the political shenanigans of the world. We know many of you think of Dr. Kevin's show as a spiritual show, and it is a spiritual show. And if anything, politics has become quite spirited indeed. In fact, one might almost say that they're a nightmare, or they're haunting us. And everything from scary, crazy clowns, like the White House, to the telling of tall tales, which is basically the way that we now refer to the GOP party. But Matt is here to kind of fill us in, have some discussions, talk about things right here on the Dr. Kevin Show. If you'd like to be part of this conversation here on the Dr. Kevin Show, here on Home Time, where we're changing the world, wait for it, one ohm at a time, then you can call us in because we're a live call-in show. It's 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. You can weigh in. You can ask questions. You can do whatever you want as long as you keep it respectful. That's all we ask here on the Dr. Kevin Show, is that we like to keep it respectful. So without further ado, we will bring on Mr. Connerton and see what news he's shaken out of this terribly boring political cycle we have going on right now in the United States of America. I mean, it's putting half the world to sleep, while the other half are laughing hysterically and pointing their fingers at us. Matt, welcome. How are you? Hey,
good. How are you?
Oh, I'm just, we used to say full of something in vinegar, but I don't know if I can say that on air or not, but,
Oh.
Vim and vigor,
Oh, there you go. Yes.
Yes, yes. Vim and vigor instead of and vinegar.
Sure.
Either one would either one would work. So,
right.
We have some interesting times going on, and I'm excited. And also, before we get too far into the show, for the rest of the month, our penitence, our atonement for tonight's show, so to speak, is going to be our next three Thursdays. We'll be with Lori Powers Otto and myself, and we are doing nothing but sharing inspirational, motivational, real-life stories to spread a little love and joy through the rest of the holiday season. So tonight we can be wild and woolly. We can say what we think about the shenanigans going on in Washington, D.C. But for the rest of the month, we're going to be all warm and fuzzy, inspiring and motivating. And there's nobody better to do that with than Lori Powers Otto. So I do want to mention that. Do plan on joining us for the rest. But Matt, so update. What's going on? What do you think? Any new news?
Well, they're going to, the House is going to move forward with articles of impeachment. And Pelosi did speak today about that. And then it will go to the Senate and they will acquit him and that'll be it.
Did you happen to see the clip of somebody asking Pelosi if she hated the president?
Oh, I saw something about that while I was on the air. That popped up on one of the news sites, but I didn't get a chance to actually look at that.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because, you know, she announced the thing and the reporter said, and to be fair to the reporter, he's like, you know, it said that, you know, this is all just happening because the Democrats hate Trump. Do you think that's true? He didn't actually say you hate Trump, but there was kind of an inferred, like, is this really what's going on? And Pelosi stopped dead in her tracks, turned around and looked and said, I don't hate anyone. I was raised Catholic. I love everybody. She goes, I don't hate anyone. And then she went through the list of why it didn't have to do with this or this or this. She goes, that's all about the election. The election will decide those matters. This is about he betrayed his oath of office to the American people. And she like went at him and did a mic drop and walked out. You should watch the clip.
Wow.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll check that out.
You know, so of course, Trump immediately hopped on and made some kind of comment about, you know, she needed to be praying for herself or he didn't need her prayers or whatever. That may be true. I don't know. But so it's that cut and dried. They're going to impeach him. The Senate's going to acquit him. No new stuff is going to come out. And then we're going to go on as business as usual.
Well, I mean, you know, it seems like they're trying to get this done and wrapped up. I mean, the Democrats are in a terrible position because, you know, this is such a distraction from the campaign, you know, the campaigns that are being waged. And, you know, in the end, it may help Trump. It may help him with his base. I mean, when Bill Clinton was impeached, you know, it ended up boosting his approval ratings because people felt a lot of sympathy for him. And, you know, I think it may have a similar effect with Trump. And we're already seeing evidence of that. And I saw some polling data in the last couple of days that showed that enthusiasm for impeachment seems to have dampened in the country. And I just don't think. You know, I don't think in the end it's going to make any difference. And if they get this, I understand. And I understand why Pelosi at a certain point had no choice. And I don't tend to have a lot of sympathy for her, but I did have some sympathy for her in this because, you know, she kept resisting going forward with impeachment because she knows how this plays out. She knows where it ends up. You know, one thing that we've seen during these hearings is Republicans are unmoved by anything that they hear from these witnesses. They are unmoved. They are not budging at all. There's not even a glimmer of doubt in any of their minds that, you know, they're going to stick with Trump no matter what. You know, I mean, the fix is in. This is Trump's party now. The Republican Party is 100% the party of Trump. They're going to protect him no matter what. And, you know, that's that. I mean, it's pretty easy to see how this plays out. I don't see. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing that he shouldn't be impeached and removed. He should be. But I would have done it before any of this, before Ukraine. I mean, there's 12 examples in the Mueller report of obstruction of justice. He should have been impeached and removed for that. But again, you end up in the same place no matter what you do. So, yeah, I mean, that's my prediction.
So now what do you think about this stuff coming out about Nunes and that he was messing in the whole Ukraine thing? Do you think that that's going to have any kind of blowback? Not that it's going to stop him. I agree. The Senate is not going to impeach Trump. And the GOP, though, I mean, you do have you seen any of those ads that that Republican group have been running that have been trashing Pence and trashing Trump? Republicans for Fiscal Responsibility, I think, or something like that. And they take these ads out on like Fox and Friends and other places, basically trashing Trump and a group of Republicans. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah. I've posted a few. They've really gone after Pence. They've really gone off, really gone after Trump. They're doing, and, you know, they point out where they actually are looking at, I mean, they've basically come out and said that he should be impeached. And this is a Republican group.
There are never Trumpers out there.
There's not enough of them.
Yeah, yeah. But they've put out like 3 commercials now, I think it is. I mean, like, they've raised millions of dollars. And they've put out and they put them all out on Fox and Friends, so they make sure that Trump sees them.
Yeah.
So,
no, that's great.
So Nunes, do you think Nunes is going to create any? Again, it's not going to stop the Senate. The Senate has see no evil, hear no evil, and speak trash, because they never address the issues. They just trash the witnesses. Whatever they can do to trash the witnesses, they don't listen to anything they say, really.
Right. Right.
But Nunes thing, is that going to go anywhere? What do you think?
I don't know. I'm really curious about that. I'm very curious to see where that leads. But, you know, clearly he's tied in with Giuliani and whatever they were doing. But one of the sort of constructive criticisms I've had of the Democrats through this is they've been so focused on Ukraine, you know, and the quid pro quo. And I think I've said this on your show before. I think the quid pro quo in and of itself is kind of irrelevant. You can take the quid pro quo completely out of it and, you know, and just go with he asked a foreign power for help with the election to investigate a political rival. That right there is your crime. The quid pro quo doesn't even matter. Clearly there was one, but, you know, when Republicans argue there wasn't one, it's like, okay, well, even if there wasn't, you still have the underlying crime. But as far as Giuliani goes, I think the Democrats have missed an opportunity in not making more of that. And what I mean by that is, and I don't mean the thing about, you know, Giuliani and Nunes and Parnas and whatever the other guy's name is, I forget the other criminal, one of whom runs a company called Fraud Guarantee, which is, I mean, it's right out of an SNL skit. But Giuliani, I don't know why the Democrats don't make a bigger deal out of the fact that Rudy Giuliani, a man who is not a member of the Trump administration, not part of the cabinet, not a federal employee of any kind, never went through any sort of Senate confirmation process. Rudy Giuliani was essentially in charge of our foreign policy in Ukraine. Rudy Giuliani was in charge. Gordon Sondland said during his opening statement that nobody wanted to work with Giuliani. They recognized it was inappropriate that he was so involved. And Trump, you know, we're supposed to have 3 co-equal branches of government, and Trump circumvented the legislative branch by putting Giuliani in charge. He was never confirmed by the Senate to be in charge of anything. And Trump either put him in charge or just sort of tacitly allowed Giuliani to put himself in charge, or however it is that we got there. And he circumvented the legislative branch in doing that. And why they don't make a bigger deal about that, and I mean, not that it would matter in terms of the end result, but I don't know why they don't make a bigger deal about that. Maybe part of why it matters to me is I would be fascinated to hear what the Republican defense of that is. You know, how do you defend Giuliani's role? You know, even if Giuliani's hands are clean, even if Giuliani hasn't done anything unethical, hasn't broken any laws, whatever, He was in charge of our policy in Ukraine. Sondland had to go through him. Ambassador Taylor, Ambassador Kent, everybody had to go through him. Fiona Hill, they all had to go through him, you know, to get anything done. He was in charge. And it's, I cannot think of another example where that's happened. Now, maybe there is one where we've had someone who was never confirmed by the Senate playing a major role in our foreign policy. And I'm not naive. I know we use back channels, you know, with people who aren't even necessarily Americans sometimes to get things done. And I'm not saying that in and of itself is necessarily bad. I mean, that may have saved us in the Cuban Missile Crisis. That guy, Fulman, who they used. But this is, but I don't know of anything on this scale that I can think of in history. And I don't know why they don't make a bigger deal about that. And Republicans should be worried about that. Why does Trump just put, you know, Trump can just put any private citizen in charge of foreign policy like that? That's, I mean, that's nuts. And it shows an incredible lack of judgment.
Oh, like that was his first one.
Right.
But I think that, you know, one of the things here is there is, at least in the Trump administration, I keep on wondering, is somehow Giuliani got some kind of, like, his mother's sister slept with Fred Trump or something? Because usually it's only people related to Trump that get to break all these laws and screw us over for the good of the country.
Right.
You know, just saying, you know, but... And we'll be right back here on the Dr. Kevin Show on the first Thursday of the month with Matt Connerton.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show. Yes, that was my fault. I put it on mute because I was coughing and sneezing. I think I got somebody's flu. I started going, and I was like, I'm going to mute that. I don't want it to come across. So anyways, I'm sorry. We're back here with Matt Connerton, the only healthy one in the group tonight.
Barely.
barely, yeah. You can't get sick till the show's over.
Right.
Okay, so let's shift it out of, we're going to say, I agree with you. I don't know why they're not going after Giuliani more. I think that Giuliani is going to get dragged into something. And then the question will be, how quickly will Trump pardon him? Because we know he's committed crimes. It's all over the place. But the thing of it is, he talks about having insurance on Trump.
What a great moment.
Trump does to some degree seem as if I read somewhere that Giuliani got sat out from appearing on Fox and Friends and other things for a little bit after he made that comment because it really irritated Trump. But on the other hand, Trump didn't fire him, like, which is a normal Trump move.
Yeah.
Like, just losing it and being like, I'm done. And, and of course he's outright lied that, he didn't even, he never told Rudy to get involved with the Ukraine. Rudy kind of did it on his own. which we have several witnesses, testifying to the fact that that's a lie.
Yeah, of course.
But at some point, somebody's going to go after Rudy. The state of New York, somebody's going to go after him. And, he's up to his eyeballs. And maybe Pelosi just thought it was a distraction to try to get too much to focus too much in on Giuliani at this point. I don't know. If they had tried to impeach Trump for obstruction of justice and the Mueller report and had failed the death, it failed now. Do you think it would have had less of an effect on this election? Like, would they have been smarter? Should they have seen the fact that the more crime they let him get away with, the more crime he commits? Did they not realize that he was just going to get worse? Or did you think that they had some kind of hope that maybe he wouldn't force them into having to impeach him? Because he kind of forced it. Especially when he goes on the lawn and asks China to investigate Biden.
Well, my favorite is when he went on the lawn and said that Article 2 of the Constitution says he can do whatever he wants as president. Literally the same thing as the Nixon argument during the David Frost interview when he said, well, when the president does it, it's not illegal. Right? Like, literally the same thing. He made himself Nixon in that moment when he said, well, the Constitution says I can do whatever I want. It really is. It's an SNL skit. It's incredible. Just incredible.
It's really sad. Now, I have to ask this question. On a snowball chance at the equator. How's that? A snowball's chance at the equator.
Yeah.
The Senate turned on Trump because they thought Pence was a better bet. If something actually damning comes out, if somehow they finagle that they get somebody like Mike Mulvaney under oath, or they get one of these other stooges under oath, and they just know that they're going to do jail time if they don't tell the truth. And it all comes out. What's the reaction? What's the reaction if Trump actually got impeached?
If they convicted and removed him?
Yeah. Or convicted him but didn't remove him. Because you can do both, right?
Well, they can impeach him. The House will impeach him, but if the Senate convicts him, then that amounts to removal.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, they're not going to throw him overboard for Pence. The only way that would happen is if they could somehow, and there is a way that they could do it by secret ballot. And I'm not clear on exactly how that would work. But if they could take the vote and have it be a secret ballot, then I think they would get rid of they would throw Trump overboard for Pence. Because I'm sure they all secretly despise, as much as they, you know, publicly fillet him, rhetorically, of course, I'm sure they all privately despise Trump and would love to get rid of him. But other than that, I mean, there's just no, if it were not a secret ballot and they did decide to remove Trump, the Republicans, you know, they would be ruining many of them, their own political careers. You know, it's Trump's party now. MAGA people are so devoted to their new Lord and Savior, Donald John Trump, that, you know, any Republicans that turn on Trump, they're going to get, you know, that's it. Their political careers will be over in that moment. I mean, it's the backlash from the constituents would be incredible.
How many senators, Republican senators, are vulnerable if they just rubber stamp Trump and vote the party line? Do you think it makes any of them vulnerable? Some say Susan Collins is definitely in for a fight.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's yeah, it makes them vulnerable in the general election, of
yeah,
course.
That's what I'm asking.
Right, right. But they'd rather be vulnerable in the general election than be vulnerable in the primary. Because if they don't rubber stamp Trump and actually stand up to him, then they're vulnerable in the primary. Because they might get primaried by, because then Trump, if they turn on Trump, then Trump turns on them. And Trump with one tweet can, you know, I mean, if Susan Collins were to actually, you know, really kind of turn on Trump and start standing up to him publicly, then Trump will start tweeting bad things about Susan Collins. And then the next thing you know, some pro-Trump candidate is challenging Susan Collins from the right in the primary and probably winning, probably beating her, you know. So, you know, better to be vulnerable in the general than vulnerable in the primary. Because if you lose in the primary, you're done. At least if you can get past the primary, you got a shot in the general. But she is vulnerable. You're right. But you'd rather be vulnerable later.
Okay. So who else do you think this could backfire on? Do you think the this could cost the Republicans the Senate? Because that's the only stopgap. If we have four more years of Trump, I shudder, you know, to think of the condition this country will be left in. Besides the fact that it will be completely, absolutely bankrupt, the environment will be shot to hell, and, you know, we'll be building a wall to keep the glaciers in Canada.
and Canada will pay for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's good news. So who else do you think is vulnerable? Do you know anybody off the top of your head that you go, and do you think that the Senate could switch over this? Is there any silver linings here?
Not really. I mean, my prediction stands. I do believe that Trump will win a second term. Because like I said, I think this impeachment thing, while the Democrats had to do it and would have been derelict in their duty not going forward with it, because you have to hold the president accountable, but I do think it will ultimately backfire, unfortunately. And I think Trump will only be the stronger for it, having survived an impeachment attempt. And I think he'll win a second term. You know, it's like I always say, I always go back to the farmers. I said it today again on my show. you know, farmers are having their lives ruined by Trump's trade policy. And yet polling data shows these farmers who are now bankrupt and have lost their farms in the Midwest, they don't blame Trump. They refuse to put any of the blame on daddy. And they still support him. And they say that they'll still vote for him overwhelmingly. So I think he'll lose the popular vote again. And I think it will be by an even larger margin this time. But he'll still carry all the same states. And I think, you know, Moody's is actually predicting a landslide. Now, I don't think it'll be a landslide, but I think the electoral map will probably be basically the same as it was in 2016. I mean, I don't mean to be a bummer, but that's just how I see this playing out. I mean, how do you beat a guy like this? How do you beat someone who, like I said, and again, using the example of the farmers, if you're a Trump supporter, Trump can literally ruin your life with his policies and you'll still support him. I've never seen anything like it in the modern era. We've seen maybe examples in history, you know, going back a bit. I don't like to refer to those overtly because it's everyone does it. And it just becomes almost cliche to speak about Hitler. But in the modern era, when has there been someone who's been able to just pull off on such a scale this mass hypnosis of such a large mass of people where he can do no wrong, nothing he can do? There is nothing he can do that will upset these people or make them feel at all betrayed. I mean, he can base an entire campaign on building a wall and getting Mexico to pay for it. And he clearly is not going to get it done. It's not going to happen. And yet find me a Republican anywhere other than maybe Ann Coulter who is actually bothered by that. His biggest campaign promise is an epic fail. But they give him a pass. They give him a pass on everything. How do you beat somebody like that? And these evangelicals, the way they love him, the way they fawn over him. I mean, you know, they talk about him like he's about to replace Jesus in the Holy Trinity. I don't know how you beat somebody like that. I mean, it's otherworldly. I can't believe it. I can't believe it, but I don't know how you beat him.
Well, stay tuned. And you'll see.
Well, maybe. I hope so.
We now have another Democratic dropout whose last ditch attempt to try to stay in and see if she could shift the thing. I lost all respect for her. And that was Kamala Harris. So what do you think about that?
One thing about her, I will say, and I had a lot of mixed feelings about her, but one thing about her that I felt good about with her was I could actually imagine her on a debate stage with Trump really kind of, like I worry about somebody like Biden. You know, but Kamala, I could imagine her on a debate stage with Trump really kind of handing him his ass. I don't think Biden can do it. I don't think Elizabeth Warren can do it. I'm skeptical Bernie could do it, but I think she could have. But, you know, she has a history of being a drug warrior. And, you know, I oppose the war on drugs and. You know, I don't know. I mean, the whole thing about when she went after Biden on the busing issue, that actually kind of backfired on her.
It also backfired on her because she went after Mayor Pete, saying that he was comparing being gay to being a person of color. And that's not what he said. That's not what he said at all. And she kept on trying to represent it as that's what he said. And I think that actually lost her a lot of respect, even if you weren't a Mayor Pete fan, that he clearly said, I will never pretend I know what it's like to be a person of color, but I know what it's like to be a person who belongs to a group that's ostracized.
Right.
So how does that turn into you're comparing being gay to being black?
Right, right.
You know, that desperate attempt of hers to go and see if she could build support on that. I was just like, okay, yeah, you know what? I was not a big fan at first. I mean, I've never been a really big Kamala fan, but it all went out the window then because it's like, what are you doing? Taking a page out of the Trump playbook? You know, don't do that.
Well, but there was a pattern with her, though, in that regard. And again, I'll bring up the busing thing with Biden, you know, taking his opposition to busing, which isn't even entirely accurate. It was much more nuanced than that. And of course, during a debate format, you know, these very complicated and nuanced issues get reduced to sound bites because that's what happens in a debate. And that's just how it works. But, you know, her trying to take that and at one point actually saying to him, look, I don't believe you're racist, but, and then essentially trying to build a case there on the spot for why he actually is racist, you know, there's a pattern there. That was her strategy, you know.
Well, and it's interesting because Biden was actually beating her with black voters in all the polling I saw.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, she was, I mean, her, Cory Booker, and Mayor Pete were all like at 1-3% of black voters. They were all less than 5. And Biden was in the 30 percentile. Oh, so at least the ones I saw. So we're going to be right back and talking about what's going on in the political world today here on the Dr. Kevin Show. Don't hesitate to join the conversation at 202-570-7057.
The Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please, help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the last segment on the first Thursday of the month. That is the last first Thursday of the month of 2019. And what a year it's been. And as always, on the first Thursday of the month, we have Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed. You can listen to Matt Connerton 4 to 6 Monday through Friday at 95.3 WMNH. Or you can go on to IPMNation.com and listen to it on the internet if you are not local to the Manchester, New Hampshire area. Matt tends to spend a lot of time on politics on his show, and we have him in once a month to share his wit, his wisdom, and his eternal pessimism on the ridding of the disease known as Trump in the White House.
Yes.
So, Matt, Bloomberg, what do you think? Who's he going to steal people from? Do you think there's anything that's going to come of him? He's coming in kind of late. He's going to miss Iowa. He's going to miss New Hampshire. I mean, he's spending a ton of money.
I don't know why he's doing this. I don't think he has any chance. I don't think there's any enthusiasm for him. I cannot think of a single person that I know or anyone I've seen online or in media anywhere who is enthusiastic about Bloomberg for any reason. And I don't get it. I don't know what he's doing. And the whole skipping Manchester, I mean, the whole skipping New Hampshire and Iowa thing, you know, that has been tried before. And by the way, you know who tried that once before when he ran for president? Rudy Giuliani. He tried skipping New Hampshire and Iowa and going straight to South Carolina and then on to Super Tuesday. And it turned out to be a disastrous strategy for him. But no, I mean, Bloomberg's kind of a yawn. I don't get it. I don't know if this is just on his bucket list to run for president. You know, he's teased it several times in the past. But I just don't see it.
So you heard? Did you hear about the Biden meltdown? I think it was yesterday at the when somebody one of the places he was talking, somebody said, you know, how could he justify getting his son a job with you know, the Ukraine, Burma. Burisma. And he's like, and he like started yelling at the guy, at the questioner, like, that's a lie, blah, blah, blah. He totally melted down on him and then started challenging the guy that, you know, somebody else challenged his age. And he started saying, I'll do push-ups right here with you. I'll show you how fit I am. I'll show you. And I thought, oh my God, he's losing it. If
yeah,
yelling that to people coming. Did you hear about all of that, or am I giving you?
Well, we actually played the clip of it on my show today. It was kind of what we wrapped up with on the show, and I was commenting on how I'd never seen. I mean, I've seen testy exchanges with candidates and people at these rallies and. And, you know, sometimes the people are plants from an opposing campaign or whatever. But I've never seen, and I'm sure it's happened, I can't think of another example offhand where a candidate has actually insulted a voter so directly. Because Biden, see, when I first saw the story pop up online, and I saw the quote, you're a damn liar, I assumed in that instant that this was someone at the campaign event saying this to Biden. And then I watched the video and I'm like, oh no, Biden's actually calling this guy that. He's actually saying to this guy, you're a damn liar. And I was like, whoa, I don't think I've ever seen that before. And I thought it was pretty interesting. And yeah, and then he's challenging him to, you know, he called him fat, and then he challenges him to the push-ups, and I was like, wow, you know, Joe's got a little fire in the belly there. Not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I you know, it was kind of a raw, real moment, which is refreshing in a sense. And, you know, maybe Biden feels like he has to show a little more aggression, you know, if he, because like I said earlier, I mentioned it, I
worry about Biden on a debate stage with Trump. You know, Biden is older. He's at times, I think he looks a little bit frail, you know, and Trump, I mean, for all of his faults, I will say this. For a guy who, what is he, 72? There's nothing frail about him, you know, and he I don't know. I think he's a young 72, maybe not mentally, but I don't know if he ever, you know, was mentally healthy. But, you know, physically, I mean, he seems like, I don't want to say healthy, but you know what I'm saying. Like, there's nothing frail about him.
Yeah,
and he must have good
age as well.
Right. And he must have good genetics because to have made it to 72 and eat allegedly a steady diet of fast food and not have colon cancer, he clearly there's something good in his genes. But maybe Biden feels like he's got to show some aggression to reassure people that he can hang with Trump on a debate stage while Trump is just hurling insults at him and calling him Sleepy Joe and whatever else, all that stuff that the MAGA people love, all that stuff. Because Trump's going to run the exact same play, the exact same program mentally and rhetorically that he did with Hillary. He's going to do the exact same thing with Biden. And Biden, I fear, will be less able to fend off those attacks than Hillary was. Because Biden, you watch Biden in these debates, and sometimes he kind of gets stuck, and he misspeaks, and he doesn't seem as quick as he used to be. And, you know, I think Trump might just run right over him. So maybe Biden's trying to be a little more aggressive, and he kind of showed that with that guy. I don't know, you know.
So Bloomberg ain't going nowhere. Deval Patrick. I don't even think most people know that he declared. So that's
right.
How that one's going. Of the people you have seen debate that are left, who do you think could best stand up to Trump on a debate stage?
I can imagine Mayor Pete doing it because I think his strategy would be, you know, to just not give in to the bully, you know, like, you know, Trump will be trying to bully him. And I think Mayor Pete, I can imagine just kind of being above it all, you know, and just, and, you know, the young guy looking like the mature one, you know, next to the old guy who's actually very immature. So I can imagine Mayor Pete doing that very well. Plus, I don't think Mayor Pete can be rattled. Maybe Elizabeth Warren can hang with Trump. I mean, she'd probably have to play it the same way Mayor Pete does. You know, I mean,
and
she's obviously
– and I'm afraid that she won't. I think she's going to get sucked into the ire. I don't think she's as emotionally – I don't think she's as emotionally stable as Mayor Pete is.
Yeah. I mean, Bloomberg, you know, he's, even though he's not going anywhere, I think Bloomberg at least would be able to hang with Trump in the sense that, you know, he can stand there and say, look, I'm an actual, genuine, real billionaire, and I have the tax returns to prove it, and you can look at them, you know, and kind of challenge Trump's credibility in that way. Boy, who else have we got? I mean, I'd like to see Tulsi in there. I like Tulsi, but that's also not going to happen. Cory Booker. I can imagine him hanging with Trump, and he's pretty good with the quips and the one-liners. I don't think he has any chance, but I can imagine him in that spot. Biden.
Okay.
I mean, Biden is the clear front runner. But he's probably the worst one in the field in terms of being on that stage with Trump. He's got to be the worst one. I mean, he'll crumple.
You didn't say anything about Bernie.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how I forgot Bernie either, because he's obviously a figure that looms large. Yeah, the problem with Bernie is he'll seem very old next to Trump. Even though he's only a couple years older than Trump, he'll seem old, and he's had the heart attack, and that's going to make people very nervous, even though it's actually probably the best thing that could have happened to him, because clearly that stent has done him some good. I noticed right during that first debate after the heart attack, when he came back for that debate, he actually seems stronger. Like, you can tell he's better off having better to have a stent than a clogged artery. But 4 years ago in 2016, I would have said, yeah, I think Bernie could beat Trump, probably would have a better shot at it than Hillary, at least. But now I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure how that looks on a debate stage.
Okay. So, what else has taken your attention in the last few minutes of the show? What has made you sit up and take notice?
Wow. Impeachment's kind of sucked all the oxygen out of everything else. Although it was interesting. I'm really worried about NATO. I mean, Trump really doesn't seem to want anything to do with it. That's a concern. Now he's pouting. He's pouting because they laughed at him, Trudeau and those others. Geez, even Boris Johnson was in on that. Can you imagine like being laughed at by Boris Johnson? Like, oh, that's got to hurt.
Yeah. Well, that didn't go too well.
No.
But he's still ticking people off, and he's still initiating trade wars. So what do you think about the North Korea threat?
Now, I saw something. Is there some sort of new development with that? Because I saw something about it, but then I just didn't quite get to it.
Okay. So Kim Jong-un threatened that the U.S. was going to get a Christmas gift from North Korea because of something that Trump said or did, that he felt like Trump was saying that he had played him, or that there was something that Trump did, big surprise. And but all I know is he threatened that the U.S. would have U.S. would get a Christmas gift from North Korea.
Oh, maybe they'll have another Twitter fight. I wouldn't worry. It's just another love. It's a lover's quarrel. That's all.
Well, it's, I think that, some people were saying that they might do, some kind of test, they might do some kind of muscle testing. 15 hours ago, North Korea will send a Christmas gift to the United States, but what that is, what the present contains will depend on the outcome of the ongoing talks between Washington and Pyongyang, a top official has warned. So he's threatening Trump. Now that's going to go over well. The ominous comments, which some have interpreted as a sign that North Korea could resume long-distance missile testing, comes as the clock ticks closer to the country's self-imposed end-of-the-year deadline for nuclear negotiations with the Trump administration. and that they're in a riot, a rut. So he is threatening something. So I got one last question because we're almost out of time.
Yes.
You and I are both pretty clear. We're in agreement that Trump's a narcissist. I mean, he's
you could
put his picture in. A narcissist can never ever be seen as in some way, shape, or form wrong or whatever. You know,
right.
They always have to be right. Everything has to get spun. Do you think that the fact that even though he's not going to get thrown out by the Senate, will impeachment be enough to set him over the edge and have him do something really stupid?
Oh, and no.
Okay.
No. He'll welcome it. Oh.
Okay.
Nope, he welcomes it.
So it should be an interesting month, and I look forward to speaking to you at the beginning of January. Matt,
absolutely.
Thanks for being on, and you have a Merry Christmas, and send my love to Miss Jenny.
You got it. Thank you, Dr. Kevin. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.